Good evening, everybody. I don't know if everybody's in from the gallery space. I'm Charles Berry. I'm chairman of the board of the New York Society Library, and I'm delighted to have all of you with us here today to celebrate this beautiful exhibit. I'm particularly pleased to have with us today Romano Peluso, whose family's generosity made possible the Peluso Gallery, which is just sparkling today, particularly with these amazingly refined cabinets that Chris has designed himself. I'm going to hand things over very shortly to Susan Galassi, who is a curator at the Frick, who will comment in more detail about Chris's work. But I first wanted to share a couple of thoughts of my own. I've had the pleasure of knowing Chris Hewitt for many years through my wife's family and connection, and I'm pleased to see so many of his relatives here today. I've known his art for a good number of years, and it's remarkably refined, well-crafted, has a sense of humor and seriousness at the same time. But it wasn't until this summer that I saw one of the pieces, some of the pieces that are here today, made of, I guess it is bronze, and it just made me think of a metaphor that I have to share with all of you. Having studied Latin for longer than I would have cared, I was reminded of the Ode of Horace, and I think one of Chris's pieces might actually have Horace on the cover. It's the Ode 330, Exigi monumentum aere perennius. I have created a monument more lasting than bronze. I think for a library such as ourselves, we are dedicated to creating things that do last longer than ourselves, just as Horace's art has, and indeed, as I'm sure Chris Hewitt's art will. So without more ado, I'll hand things over to Susan Galassi, who, as I said, is a curator at the Frick of very broad accomplishment. She's lectured widely on Picasso, Manet, El Greco, and many, many others. So Susan, thank you.
Good evening. Many of us here tonight who are longtime friends of Chris have had the good fortune to live with some of his small brass objects over many years. Perhaps they're on your mantelpiece or a bookshelf, as they are in our house and even in my office at the Frick. And you know how companionable they are and how much you enjoy making new groupings of them as a new one arrives. Groups that speak to each other in different ways. This exhibition takes the idea of objects nuzzling up to one another on a shelf somewhat randomly to a new level, in the sense that a fresh aspect of Chris's mind is at work here, not just as the creator, but as the librarian of his work. At the invitation of the New York Society Library, he focused on the object that has inspired him most over the past decade in his brass sculpture, the book. But are his brass books sculpture? We don't relate to books primarily through shape, volume, mass, texture, and material substance, the properties of sculpture, though those attributes play a role. But precisely in what is non-object about them, through image, emotion, memory, and thought, compressed and distilled over time. Through reading, we leave behind the limits of the gravitational sphere. But why should a literary sculptor have to choose? It's in this tension that Chris, as reader sculptor, has found his subject. And in looking at these objects, we are invited into the thoughts, experience, and emotions that make up his creative world. Let's take a moment to read his sculpture, which operates on many levels. As objects, these works share many characteristics. They're made of brass. They're small, hard, cold, polished, reflective, and they emit light. They're made simply by soldering and hinging parts of metal together. Sheet metal the artist buys from industrial supply and hardware stores. The letters that form the words are punched in. There are many types, a little like typesetting, and they too are industrial in origin as well as in design. There are many different types of book objects here, single volumes and sets, albums, sketchbooks, diaries, a portfolio of images, such as the long, narrow panoramas. There's also a limited edition, a book with only a single page of Mandelstrom's Summer Solstice, and there are books in translation. Their provenance is far-flung. These editions hail from Paris, London, and Alexandria. Left to their own devices, books can appear to be flat, boring objects. But Chris has given his books a number of attitudes, as any good sculptor should. They're closed, open, warped, ruffled, stacked, leaning, belted, and locked. They come with bookmarks and library cards. They offer everything that delights readers, writers, collectors, browsers, and borrowers. In other words, everyone who uses this library. As Chris eloquently put it in his introduction, books speak to one another. The objects in these cases extend the conversation from the literary domain to all the arts. Sculpture debates with poetry, while painting, music, prose, and math converse in a kind of school of Athens. Each piece in these cases is unique, yet draws its meaning from its place in the ensemble. Grouped, the books form compositions and can be appreciated on a purely visual level, leaving their literary content and even gravity behind. One object is mirrored in another, and the reflection destroys the solidity of brass, turning it into a painting that opens into imaginary space where we can travel, just as we do in the books they purport to represent, from antiquity to Picasso. As for the literary side, I'll leave that to others here, and we'll try now to place these works in an art historical context. You've only to come to the Frick to see our current show of small bronze objects made by the Renaissance sculptor Andrea Riccio, made for the table of a scholar's studiolo, to see the connection. The Hewitts we love also adorn our desks as objects of contemplation, jeux d'esprit, and tokens of friendship, partaking of the enlivening conversation Chris carries on with us, and which will now open to all the readers who pass through this hall.
Somewhat reluctantly, said he might entertain questions if there were some.
I certainly can't add to what Susan has said.
That was beautiful, Susan. Thank you very much. If there are some questions, Benita?
It's just reading that I've been doing. It's actually a way of staying with the book a little longer once it's finished.
But when you combine them, are they actually reading that you've done usually sequentially, or
no? It's a card catalog.
I see.
It's a card catalog.
But
it also helps the scholar. It also helps the scholar determine what to read that day.
It's kind of wheel of fortune.
Exactly.
Right.
Are ones that appear to be either very well thumbed or more worn out, is that an opinion about their work?
Or no. No, it's just different shapes that books take. Books are, we appreciate them as objects, but those objects sometimes are ripped apart. Charlotte. Because anyone looking at a list of the classics always says, of any list, always says, but what about... So, for instance, Caesar isn't in there. I think he should be, but I left a space so that you could put it, the one you didn't find.